The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hello and welcome to The Upgrade, a podcast from the team at lifehacker.com, where we will help you improve your life in a specific way, one week at a time. I'm Andy Oren, and joining me this week are Lifehacker writers Eric Ravenscraft and Thorne Klesowski. How are you doing, guys?
I'm doing pretty okay.
Good.
And this week, we're taking a look at the two major operating systems on the markets, namely Windows 10 and Mac OS. PC versus Mac has been a longstanding rivalry for forever, basically, with Apple's software usually described as being better designed, but Windows allowing for more freedom with what you actually do with your machine. And Windows has actually been getting better through the years, and right now Windows 10 is getting so many updates that it's in a pretty good place, I think. So it's worth asking if you're a Mac user whether it's time to switch to Windows, or vice versa, if you're not a fan. So today we're going to look at the pros and cons of Mac and Windows. And later in the show, we'll be joined by Christina Warren and Alex Kranz of Gizmodo to discuss the various hardware advantages of each OS. But first, if you'd like to ask a question or ask us to upgrade a certain thing in your life for a future episode, you can email us at upgrade@lifehacker.com or give us a call and leave a message at 347-687-8109. Keep it clean and we might play your question on the air. Now let's get right to it, and this is Lifehacker bread and butter. We're going to argue about some operating systems. So, like I was saying, Windows and Mac, they're both very modern systems now, and they're fairly feature congruent. Windows obviously dominates the markets, with the various versions having like 90% of the desktop computer space. And even though Apple only has maybe less than 10%, they're like deeply loyal users who have been using the same system for years. So why is that, first of all? Why does Windows have such a wide market share? What do you think, guys?
Well, I think primarily
affordable
Windows.
Affordable hardware, yeah, probably.
Yeah, exactly. You can put it on the cheapest computer around and get all the advantages of a really expensive system. So that's probably what keeps
right. Yeah, it's designed Microsoft. to work on pretty much anything. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, and also, I mean, the one major difference between the two is gaming. So basically, PC gamers are a huge market there, I'm sure.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
And for a lot of people, that's the main advantage of Windows, is that you can make your own system. And if you are a gamer, that matters a lot because you want the highest end hardware and you want to update it frequently. And with a Mac, you can't really do that, right?
Yeah, like I have a gaming PC that I've upgraded the graphics card in it every couple of years to be able to play the most modern games, but I feel like I'd have a much harder time doing that if I were on a Mac.
No, I mean, that's literally impossible to do on a Mac.
Yeah. Are there no models of Macs that can be upgraded? I mean, I guess I've seen some that you can upgrade the RAM, but...
You can upgrade RAM, hard drive. That's about it.
Yeah, no graphics card upgrades.
Right. And what are the actual, like, game options? Is Steam on Mac? I don't even know.
You have Steam. There's Steam and there's the Mac App Store. Pretty much a good majority of like popular indie games are on Mac. And then a handful of AAA games end up on Mac close to when they release on PC. I mean, like stuff like Civilization is always on Mac. Big EA titles, you know, whatever those are these days, are on Mac. It just either comes a little bit later or it's kind of like a shoddy port that maybe doesn't run fantastically well, but they're around. I mean, and basically all indie stuff ends up being on Mac.
That was actually surprising to me. Yeah. I kind of thought that indie stuff would have been less popular on a Mac because of the development resources you need for it, but you see
most of the indie games that are using like Unity or any of those other things I can't think of at this exact moment, but I mean, like those are all cross-platform.
Okay.
So it's really easy to just deploy to like everything.
In terms of security for the two platforms, I'm wondering that, well, Windows has had a long reputation for being like plagued by viruses, in part because it's just such a widespread system that that's who people would target with malware. Is that still the case? And is Mac any more immune?
I mean, I think that Windows is still going to be the biggest target of malware, but that's just because it has so many users out there. And there are still millions of people on older versions of Windows. You don't like it when Microsoft pushes right. you to upgrade. So there's going to be a lot of vulnerability out there. But for the modern versions of Windows, I think their security has gotten a lot better. Microsoft finally got something close to a proper permission system, and it comes built in with Windows Defender. So they've beefed up their security if you're running the new versions.
Yeah, and Thorin, are Macs still relatively immune just because it's a smaller market share?
I don't think it's necessarily just the smaller market share. It's also just the fact that since operating system upgrades are free on Mac, more people tend to upgrade. And Apple's long been much better about like deploying security updates quickly and automatically in the background. I mean, I guess Windows 10 has kind of improved on that as well. But Macs have just been better at that also, and Apple's been a little bit better at responding to that stuff. But yeah, I mean, malware still exists on Mac. It's just a little bit harder to accidentally get it on there.
Okay, yeah, it seems like there's fewer rogue pop-ups in my experience, and like stupid things and executables you can download on Mac, as opposed to Windows, where I see that stuff all the time if I'm, you know, looking through downloading channels that aren't quite legitimate, let's say. One issue people have asked about is privacy, because Microsoft got in a little bit of trouble for being kind of opaque about what data Windows 10 is sending back to the mothership. Realistically, it's not like secret spying on you. It's usually just system data. But has Microsoft done anything to address that, Eric? Do you know?
I think they've rolled back some of their, I guess, spying features, but with Windows 10, they started sending a lot of analytics back to Microsoft, and they've also used that for advertisements in Windows 10. So it's using some information about how you use your computer to tailor like lock screen ads. I see those pretty regularly just because I haven't taken the time to disable them.
Wait, you have ads in your operating system?
If you use a very loose definition of ad, but yes, kind of. The lock screen when you first turn your computer on, it'll say, here's this, like sometimes it's just a picture of a place, like here's this beautiful place. But sometimes we've seen like Tomb Raider ran a full screen ad on the lock screen with Lara Croft looking over a cliffside. And it was like, buy Tomb Raider today. And that pissed a lot of people off, understandably so, because now you're getting ads for a game in your OS. Once you're inside Windows, you don't really see anything, or at least I haven't seen any ads, but they're scattered on the lock screen. I think some might be in live tiles or something, but regardless, you really shouldn't see that at all. So I don't think Microsoft's gotten better enough about that, to say nothing of how much data they're collecting.
Yeah, but most of that stuff you can disable or turn off or adjust, right?
Yeah, if you know how to, but there are a dozen places where you can disable this type of tracking or that type of tracking, and I don't even recall off the top of my head how to disable the ads on like the lock screen. I don't think it requires a registry modification, but it might. And like, there's no one button where you can just go say, here, turn off data tracking and ads. And that's kind of a problem.
And that's kind of one of the problems of the Windows system, is that different manufacturers will include different apps and different ads like that, since Windows works on so many different machines. And by comparison, Macs don't really have that problem because they're only designed to work on a very small number of machines. Thorin, is there any concern with Apple tracking your usage or looking at data that you don't necessarily want them to see?
Yes and no. It depends on how tinfoil hat you want to get. I mean, they're collecting data with Siri. They collect usage stats and everything else and for diagnostic purposes. It's super easy to opt out of that stuff. But probably more importantly, in this day and age, Apple is just very transparent with it. I don't think there's been much in the way of controversy. I think there was something with Siri a while back, and everyone was kind of like, well, I mean, the microphone has to be on all the time kind of thing. but they've been pretty good to respond and been pretty like clear about what they're doing and why they're doing it, which is probably, I don't know, for me at least, the most important part.
Yeah, you mentioned Siri. Let's talk about the voice assistants that each operating system has. Windows has Cortana, and Mac OS recently got Siri last year, I believe. Eric, what do you think about the Windows voice assistant?
I use Cortana somewhat for like reminders. I don't find it as useful as, say, a voice assistant on a phone, just because I don't, I mean, I have a microphone hooked up, but I'm not sitting there talking to my desktop. But like you can hit the Windows key to type out a command, and I find that's pretty useful. It actually got a lot more useful for me recently because we featured a couple of downloads that change the default browser and search engine. Normally, Cortana defaults to using Microsoft Edge for the browser. You can't change that. And it'll search with Bing. Mm-hmm. You can't change that either, unless you use the downloads we featured, which that has turned a lot of people off, myself included. I don't want to use a separate browser just because I searched for something from the start menu. But once I got that fixed, it's actually really handy to be able to just search for something no matter where I am in the operating system. I don't think it's Cortana's like the centerpiece of my life, though, the way Microsoft wants it to be.
Yeah, especially because not all of us have like a good microphone that's going to actually pick up our audio when we're just yelling at our computer. Thorin, how is Siri on Mac? Is it worth attention? Is it like an actual feature people might use?
No. I mean, it's about as useful as it is on iPhone, which I would argue that it's not particularly useful on iPhone already, but it is fine. I don't ever use it at all for anything. The only thing I do, it integrates with Spotlight and it can save search settings in your notification center. So I use it for that sometimes, but that's like a text-based thing that doesn't actually require any voice assistant stuff.
Yeah. What kind of things can Siri actually do, though? Like, can you just ask the weather or what?
Yeah, I mean, the same stuff you can do on iPhone. You can search for things. I guess it would be handy for searching for files. It's obviously like a huge thing for accessibility. If you can't really use a mouse or, you know, whatever, like searching for stuff, typing, all that kind of stuff, it's great for. But for the rest of us, like, I don't know, it it sounds cool when you hear about it, but then like in actual use, it's easier to just type for most of us.
In terms of other advantages of Windows, or this could be a disadvantage, Windows is also designed to support touch devices. What do you guys think about that? Like, is it worth using a fully functional OS on a tablet?
I think so. I recently got the Surface Book, so I've got the one that converts from a laptop into a tablet. I don't use the touch screen a ton, but sometimes if I'm sitting on the couch, I'll use the tablet mode. And Microsoft or Windows has gotten way better at using touch input during the Windows 8 phase where they wanted to turn your entire desktop into a touchscreen. It wasn't really that good. But now like you can use it to scroll through web pages or some apps or have slightly bigger buttons so you can, you know, just tap your way through the web browser instead of using a keyboard and mouse. And I think it's useful enough in that I don't need a separate laptop and tablet anymore, which I never liked having to do anyway. It's not revolutionary or anything, but it's handy to have.
Yeah, and by comparison, Apple has their iOS, of course, which is similar but different from Mac OS. One thing I want to touch on is that Apple has their App Store, which originally was for just the phone, but now there's also a desktop App Store. Is there an advantage to that, kind of having a walled garden, so to speak? What do you think, Thorin?
I think there is from a security standpoint, because you can, like, if you're setting up a grandparent or parent's computer, you can kind of lock it down so they can only use apps from the App Store, which can kind of like curtail any malware or adware or anything kind of accidentally coming into the system. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the main advantage. I don't ever open the App Store. I don't really, but I'm not like, I mean, even though my job has me looking at software a lot of the day, I don't like just sit around browsing it. Although I guess that is maybe a handy feature for people who are just looking for like a to-do app or whatever. You can kind of just see a bunch of them and go from there.
And also, unlike iOS, you're not tied to the App Store. You can all just download stuff from the internet, right?
Yep.
And Microsoft does have a version of an App Store, but for years it was kind of a full of weird knockoff apps, and now they're trying to get back into it with the universal Windows platform apps, which is what they call the apps that run on every Windows device. But of course, one of the main advantages of Windows is that you can run like anything, including all the crazy malware you don't want to. Eric, do you have any thoughts about software options available on Windows? Is it more, are there more options basically if you're using Windows?
I mean, in general, yes, there's almost limitless options for software on Windows as long as you know where to find it online. The App Store, I wish it was better, but it's not. For years, Microsoft tried to push the touchscreen only or the full screen apps in the App Store, and only in the last year or so did they start allowing desktop apps. And most developers haven't put their apps on the App Store. So there's like two or three apps you'll find that you'll want to use and the rest are garbage. But as long as you have a connection to the internet, though, you can find the most obscure utility to do the tiniest little tweaking thing you want, as well as big, huge apps like Photoshop or Steam or whatever. So, I mean, I've never not been able to find an app for what I need on Windows, which is something I can't say of some other operating systems I've used.
Right.
So, but like, at least a life hacker, it seems like, I mean, maybe I just notice this more because it's like my beat or whatever, but it seems like we talk way more about Mac software than we do about Windows software.
Yeah.
From my end of the experience, I think that's largely because we've talked about so much Windows software. And also, half the time, what we end up finding are web apps. I can think of a few different times recently where I found an app that you could download the Windows version for, but the version on the web is just as good, so why not just use that? Like, there's a Facebook app, but we're not going to talk about the Windows Facebook app because you just go to Facebook.com. So I don't know if it's maybe there's more specialized Mac software.
I mean, I would argue that maybe Mac software is just, for lack of a better description, it's just a little bit sexier or a little bit, like, better marketed.
Like I said, even though Apple has such a small piece of the market, they do tend to dominate the conversation somehow.
Yeah. I mean, and also, like, I mean, that is one advantage of the Mac App Store, too, though, is like you're paying with your Apple ID. So you're maybe a little less hesitant to pay some weird random website with a PayPal button on it to download software.
Yeah.
Or to buy software.
Macs get a lot of the sexy software, but Windows, you'll often see like some tiny utility to change. I think I saw one that was like to move the time and date part of the system tray slightly to the right where it used to be on an earlier version. Like it was the most pointless utility, but you can find that for anything, and none of that is sexy, so it wouldn't be the kind of thing that'd be featured in an App Store anyway. So I think Mac does have an advantage there in that if you want sexy, trendy development, you're going to find it there.
Right, yeah, but if you want an infinite number of options to slightly tweak your system, tweakability, Windows might be a better option. Yeah,
exactly.
So I'm wondering, Thorin, you kind of sound like you're not really that impressed with Macs, but you do use Mac OS every day, don't you? Isn't that your daily driver?
Yeah, I mean, I've used Macs since, I think, 97 or 98. And it's, I mean, I'm not the type of person that needs to tweak settings or change things around, and I don't play PC games. So, I mean, a Mac boots up instantly and I can run the, you know, 20 programs that I need it to run, and it works perfectly fine every day. So that's right. Kind of why I use it and have continued using it for over a decade.
Yeah. And Eric, by comparison, you use Windows every day, right?
I do. And I tweak the heck out of it, and I do play PC games. So that's probably why I land on this side. I'd like to get a Mac at some point. I just haven't been able to justify it when Windows works just fine for me, which I guess they both do. So,
yeah, I mean, the honest takeaway is that they're both so fully featured that you can just go get any system, whether it's a Mac or a PC. And chances are it'll already have everything you need. And a lot of our work we do in the cloud anyway, just in Gmail or in Google Docs or whatever you prefer. So I'm wondering, if I do want to like make a switch, if I'm on Mac, but I feel a little like I don't have the options I want, how can people go about migrating to Windows? Is there a complicated process to do that, or is it easy?
I think it depends on, and like a lot on how much you have stored locally on your computer. Like, I feel like nowadays everything is kind of cloud storage anyway. So, you know, if you're using Dropbox or whatever, you don't have to do much. If you're on iCloud and you want to switch over to Windows, it might take a little bit more effort.
Yeah, I tend to insulate myself from having to, because like I go from back and forth from Windows to Android and sometimes Chrome OS, but I usually do that by using cloud services for everything. So then I just log into those things. I don't tend to move much data around on my local drives if I can avoid it.
Honestly, the idea of migrating massive amounts of data is kind of outdated because we don't store that much locally anymore. But one thing I also want to talk about is that Apple is known for their hardware, and that's one of the reasons that people tend to buy in. What do you guys think of, like, the cult of the MacBook and the iMac? Are those devices worth people's attention?
I do not like the term cult of, but, I mean, case in point, I have had the same iMac for 8 years, and I'm still using it, and it's fine.
Right. Have you upgraded it much? Can you upgrade it much?
I put an SSD in and I upgraded RAM when I bought it, but that's it.
And most Windows machines, at least in terms of desktops, are much more upgradable because you can open them up and tinker with it. Depending if it's a thin laptop, then chances are you can't really change anything even if it's Windows just because of the way the hardware is designed. Yeah, what do you think, guys? Can we really go one way or the other, recommend Windows for most people, recommend Macs for most people? Who would we recommend Macs for?
I think it's so easy to just test drive these things at this point. And if like you're not sure, like going in and like just go into an Apple store and try out a Mac and see how you feel about it or whatever. But like my dad was a Windows user forever and I got him a MacBook Air a few years ago and he loves it. Like he likes, because he just uses email and the internet, so it's like perfect for him.
Yeah, who should go with Windows, do you think?
Everyone else, I think. It's sort of hard to nail down who Windows is for, because it's on such a variety of hardware. They're like, oh, you want a really powerful gaming machine? Well, then go get a really powerful gaming PC. You want a web browsing device? Get a cheap laptop. Windows is kind of just sort of the afterthought. Like, if you want a really fancy laptop or desktop that is simple and doesn't do a lot of tweaking, then a Mac is good for you. But if you don't have that special need, then Windows is what's left.
I would argue that that is a less special need. I would argue that MacBooks are probably a little bit more universal for that reason. Hmm. And like a college student, like, it takes the debate part out of it. You're just like, I have two choices, a MacBook Pro or a MacBook Air. And I just have to choose that instead of like, which one of these like 400 laptops?
Right.
And that's fair too. The only other reason then is if you can't afford it, which, admittedly, that's the reason that's kept me away from a Mac for so long, because I actually really like Mac OS. I had a MacBook Pro for a while, but I ended up selling it once and have not been able to justify getting a new one solely based on the price.
Yeah,
but
that's
like a
true. Comparable
Windows laptop is like hardware wise is usually close to the same price, right?
Right, but I don't usually need a comparable Windows laptop.
I mean, maybe not to like a MacBook Pro because those things are like ludicrously priced, but like they're like normal end MacBooks.
Yeah, like it depends. If you get like a totally tricked out MacBook, then it ends up costing a lot more than a Windows book. But the entry level ones are decently priced, I think.
What is the cheapest Mac laptop you can get?
I think 900 for the like one of the smaller Airs. They're in a weird spot right now where their hardware lineup is kind of baffling and is about to be refreshed. So
don't buy one right now.
I wouldn't buy a MacBook right now. Also, to be clear, don't buy a MacBook right now. It's a horrible time to buy one.
Eric, don't you have a Surface Book? Is that right?
Yeah, I just got that. I'm completely undermining everything I just said about buying cheap laptops. But
but how do you feel about that? How do you feel about Microsoft's push into high-end hardware?
I actually think they're doing really well. I actually hate laptops. That's why I usually don't get expensive ones. And then I use the Surface Book and it actually works for me. I think partly just being able to switch it to a tablet is what's appealing to me because that's more comfortable. It's really solid hardware. It feels like the kind of thing that's going to last for a long time. Hopefully it does. It's fast. It's powerful. It does what I need it to do. And I like the touch input. It comes with a stylus, so I've started drawing with it. Like it's more than I was expecting to get from a Windows laptop. Usually Windows laptops are okay, but not something you're going to keep for a decade. And this one's a bit higher quality than that. So I was impressed. Which is not something I usually am with Microsoft laptops.
But I mean, that's right. Part of the appeal of like both right now is like you can spend that much money and it's going to last you at least 5 years, as opposed to maybe 10 years ago where you spend, $1,500 on a laptop and you're going to get 2 years out of it.
Yeah, exactly.
I think our conclusion is that they're both nice. It's all fine. Just get whatever.
buy what you like, which is a nice place to be, really.
All right. I think we can leave that there. Both systems have their advantages and disadvantages, but honestly, you can choose whatever you like, and you'll be fine. And now we're going to take a look at the hardware options for Windows and Mac. So joining me in the studio is Christina Warren from Gizmodo, as well as Alex Kranz from Gizmodo.
Hey guys, I'm Alex.
How are you doing today?
Hello. Doing well.
Christina, you don't want to identify yourself so people know which is which? We have very similar sounding voices, I think.
Who are you, Alex?
That's me. I'm Alex. When you hear that really nice, breathy tone, that's me. The real high one will be Christina.
Would you agree with that?
I would not agree with that. I mean, my voice is slightly higher, maybe, but no, I would not agree with that.
I'm going a lot lower than I usually do.
Okay.
I usually sound like a chipmunk. But I thought that wouldn't be as pleasing to the ears of the Lifehacker audience. I wanted to
voice if that helps everyone.
I think our readers are happy to have any voice that you have. Just your normal voice is
right.
Fine. Apple has kind of always had a reputation for being kind of the best designed hardware. And for the past like 10 years or so, you can just walk into the store, buy a Mac, MacBook, whatever, and you feel comfortable knowing that you have like kind of a top of the line consumer laptop. Is that still true today, or have they slipped a little bit?
I think they've slipped a little bit, and that's been the most disappointing thing to me about the newest MacBook Pros that were released back in October, was that, like you said, it used to be you would go into a store, you could buy a MacBook or a MacBook Pro, it would be expensive, probably more expensive than a Windows computer.
Right.
But if you were to spec everything out, especially when they first came out, it would be about on par, and you would know you were getting kind of this superior build quality and this really good design experience, a fantastic trackpad, a good keyboard. With the latest MacBook Pros, I like them. I think they're good machines. I don't want to make it sound like they're terrible, because they're not. But because they're using processors that are a generation behind, because they went all in on USB-C, which is probably a good move, 2 years from now, but it's going to be problematic now, because of some of the other constraints they made with battery to keep it so light and thin, and because the price has gone up, that's the big thing for me too, the price has actually increased. I don't know if you can say right now that if you're looking for the best overall value in a laptop, it used to be you could say a Mac is going to give you the best value. I don't know if that's true anymore.
Right. I think the value of Macs, it wasn't just about the build quality. It was also they had a really, really good experience after you bought the product, right? You could go in, you could learn more about your computer, or you could go and get it repaired really, really simply, and it was always kind of pleasant. But as it's grown in popularity, that repair scenario is just like awful now. Like you're signing yourself up for a day in hell as soon as your computer breaks.
And you can't do it yourself with an Apple.
Yeah,
they've
I mean, it's got – I think the latest one was a little easier. The most notorious Mac computer for repairability was probably the original – not the original iBook, but the second generation iBook that was all white.
Right.
Because besides having – it was a regular computer, and you'd open it, and then all of the guts were inside another smaller metal frame, and you had to pry the frame apart. You had to completely dismantle the computer to get at all the guts, which was deeply frustrating. And they've improved on that a lot.
They have, but I mean,
everything's soldered on now.
But now, you have an integrated battery, and this is the case with most laptop makers. The RAM is soldered in to the motherboard or to the logic board, as in Apple parlance. The SSD is now soldered in as well. It used to be a proprietary connector, and you would have third parties like OWC would create alternatives. Now you can't even do that. In fairness, I will say to Apple, this is not a trend that they are alone in. When I look at most Windows laptops, when you look at repairability, they're not any better. And in fact, in some cases, they might be worse, because even though you might be stuck in a day with hell, like you're saying, Alex, if you're going to the Genius Bar, at least there's a Genius Bar. At least there's an Apple store in your area. If you have a Dell or if you have
Surface.
Or even a Surface, you've got to send that off. You know, you can go to a big box store and they have to send it off to a depot and it's got to go away. There's not and then when you're dealing with like kind of a third party at that point in time. So getting a repair, even though it's not as easy as it used to be, you at least still have a person that you're going to face-to-face. And I think that is still significantly better than what you see with almost any other, you know, Windows laptop maker.
To be fair to Windows, there are still some really cool repairable laptops out there that are being made even now. Like Samsung did the Notebook 7 Flip or whatever last year, and it was a huge monstrosity of a machine. But you could open it up and upgrade every single thing in it, and it costs $1,000. And that's
– yeah, that's cool. Like, you have those options. You're right.
Yeah, you have those options, but you have to sacrifice design in that case. Like right nowadays, if you want a really sharply designed computer, do not plan on upgrading it yourself.
Yeah, agree. Because whether you get the new MacBook or you get an XPS 13, you're not going to be able to upgrade that computer. And that, I think, is a big shift for a lot of people. If you're buying a computer now – replacing a computer you had maybe 4 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, you could at least upgrade the RAM and usually the hard drive.
Right.
And now if you're buying a laptop, especially one that's going after design, you're not able to. And you are kind of stuck in this. You've got to max out what you want when you buy it. And I think in the case of an Apple machine, that adds additional cost. So you look at the new MacBook Pro, either with or without the Touch Bar, and, you know, 8 gigabytes of RAM is standard. Now, that's fine for now, but if you're anticipating on using this computer for 5 years, you probably want 16 gigabytes.
Yeah.
So you've got to customize that. The same thing with the hard drive. A 256 gigabyte SSD is fine for most people, especially since we use so much stuff in the cloud. But if you're thinking about, I need this laptop for 5 years, you might want to go ahead and upgrade that. And the fact that you've got to do that all at time of purchase is a little bit disappointing.
And you mentioned the Touch Bar. How do you feel about that? Is it just a gimmick or is it actually useful?
I think that right now it's a gimmick. That doesn't mean it always will be. I think that we have seen some interesting developers do some neat things with it. Actually, as we're recording this today, Google announced that the new Canary build, the bleeding edge build of Chrome, has built-in Touch Bar support.
What? That's, it does?
Yeah, which is very cool, right?
I'm very excited.
So, you know, Safari has it built in, and I actually find the Touch Bar to be useful in Safari. I find it to be useful in Microsoft Office, which actually also recently got Touch Bar support. The Photoshop apps are getting it. For most people, key bindings are still going to be faster, I think. But there are some instances where I could see the Touch Bar being useful. And I think that being able to maybe create your own shortcuts or letting developers really play and say, here's an interface scenario that would be too complex.
Well, have they opened up the API for it?
They have. They have. And I've seen, and I've talked to some developers about, are you going to build support into your apps? And some have been very gung-ho. Some have been a little bit more hesitant, say, we'll see where it lands. But, like, there's an app I use called Better Toolbar and BTT, and it added experimental Touch Bar support almost immediately and continues to get better. That's a great app because you can customize on your Mac your trackpad and or your Magic Mouse or your Magic Trackpad to do all kinds of things that you wouldn't normally be able to do. And they've extended that to the Touch Bar as well.
I have one of the new MacBooks at home. I don't regret it. I only regret it like half the time. And, you know, I just don't find myself using it that often. Like, using the actual Touch Bar, every once in a while I'll use the screenshot button, that and volume.
Right.
But more often than not, I'm accidentally pressing it and, like, freezing up my entire computer as it's like, okay, what do you want to take a screenshot of? And I'm like, I don't want to take a screenshot of anything. I was just trying to type, and I, like, furiously typed wrong. So, like, it's just not quite there yet. And I think Apple's reluctance to open up that fundamental part of the Touch Bar, which is those shortcuts at the very beginning, like the first time you use it is those brief shortcuts.
Yes.
The fact that they're not opening that up to put in other shortcuts is a real – it's a bummer because I think that would be one of the most useful parts of it.
I agree. I think that if they could make it more like a launcher in some ways where you could launch other apps or, you know, even launch automated things. You know, Apple, even though they have we're not really sure the status of the automation team at the moment, but they have, you know – Apple Script is still a really big deal, and you can automate the hell out of stuff and run all kinds of cool little macros and scripts on your computer. I would love if I could do one of those with the tap of a button.
That would be huge.
Rather than having to, you know, use like Fast Scripts, a third-party app in the background, and use a key binding to do it. It would be great if I could just do it on the Touch Bar, and I think that would open up the possibility for a lot of people who never consider automation to the public too. But I will say, I mean, I'm with you. I think right now it's more gimmick than anything else. But I have been impressed, for instance, Office 365's Touch Bar support is, especially in apps like Excel, where sometimes to get to a certain place in the menus, it can be really convoluted.
Yeah.
You can customize what you see on the touch bar so you could immediately go right there. And I think that's really useful.
Yeah, I think some people are using it in really smart ways like that. But I've seen a lot of apps which just activated it to activate it. You know, they just have it there to have it. And like, okay, but I don't need a touch bar button to know when to bold things. I'm used to just hitting Apple B. Like, why are you giving this to me?
Right, yeah. My general impression that it's really cool and neat and fun to use, but I can't imagine, like, 5 or 6 years from now, the next generation of MacBooks would actually retain it. I feel like eventually they're going to have to walk back.
Yeah, they're either going to have to go all in it and open up that API even more and give people more access and use it as a launcher and just really embrace it. If anything, I'd say they've been way too conservative with how they're asking people to use it right now, because they're saying, okay, it's just like your old function key row, but now it's an OLED screen. And I'm like, that's cool, but you could do more with this. Why aren't you?
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you. I think they need to go all in. What we could see happen would be a fundamental rethink of Mac OS and of the Mac in general would be if you were to say, okay, well, we're actually going to embrace a touchscreen. And when I've talked to them in the past, it's always been kind of portrayed as, you know, the way that Mac OS is written, if we were to do touch, it would require a fundamental OS rethink. I don't disagree with that, because when I use a Windows computer, I honestly don't use the touchscreen, almost never. I know a lot of people do, but I almost never use the touchscreen. And every Windows laptop I've reviewed in the last 6 months has had a touchscreen. The reason I don't use it is because there is still a disconnect between what is good for a mouse pointer and what's good for a finger. And so I would wonder if we were looking, you know, 5 years in the future, I don't know. I always think about the mythical fusion, inevitable fusion between iOS and macOS.
Well,
and you could kind of see what they were doing with the iPad Pro, maybe eventually having something that's powerful enough to really be both.
It would be very different from what we're seeing from Windows manufacturers right now, because they are really almost moving away from touch. Like, they have it in very specifically designed computers, so they'll have it in their Surface, they'll have it in their two-in-ones. And in their really low-budget machines, they'll have the touch. But in their higher-end machines, most of them are moving away from it.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's talk about Windows for a second, because Microsoft has made a push to get, like, into the very high-end space with the Surface Books and the Surface Studio. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, Surface Studio. We were just talking about that on the way over.
We were.
Yeah, what do you think of those? Are they worth people's attention?
I think so.
I think if you're a professional, they're very much worth your attention.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think the Surface Pro 3 and then the Surface Pro 4 were landmark Windows devices, not just for Microsoft, huge for Microsoft, but I think for Windows devices. They were the Surface Pro 3 and the Surface Pro 4 are fantastic machines. And I think that was the first time I at least saw someone taking the tablet concept, laptop concept, and making it work really well, because you had a really good laptop that, if you wanted to, could also act as a tablet and could be ported around like a tablet. The Surface Book, which is kind of the similar idea, but a little
bit
beefier.
With a cool hinge.
With a cool hinge. And, you know, if you configure it correctly, you know, discrete graphics adds the next level. And I think that for a lot of people who are looking to maybe do a little bit more with Photoshop or with video editing and need a little more power, that's a really good machine. And Microsoft has also done a really good job with the build quality. Microsoft's in a unique position, kind of like Apple is, in that there are Microsoft stores and there is kind of a hand-holding process if you need to get support after the fact that, frankly, is better than what you're going to get if you buy a machine from Dell.
Yeah, because you actually did a little bit of playing around and calling these companies up and kind of like seeing, okay, if I broke my computer tomorrow and I wasn't Christina Warren, who knows a lot about computers, how good would the service be? And you did find that, like—
I did. Microsoft was definitely the best of the Windows people. Some of the other manufacturers, like Razer, was like, call Microsoft.
Yeah.
And I said, how to reset my Windows password.
They're like, why are you talking to us?
Right.
We do the hardware. And you find that a lot with the OEMs. They say, okay, cool, but go call Microsoft for the actual OS, whereas Apple does all of it in-house and they just say, send it to us.
Exactly. And now Microsoft, if you get a Surface Book or a Surface Pro or a Surface Studio, it's the same thing. They control the whole experience. The Surface Studio is a really interesting product, I think. It goes after a very specific audience and creatives.
Anybody I've talked to in the industry that's developing these things, they say that people don't actually want touch unless they're using it on a regular basis, unless they're those professionals who are drawing, who are artists or video editors or whatever.
Or maybe you're a marketing person and you frequently are showing slides off.
Right,
and so
right.
That's why, I guess that's why convertibles are still so popular.
But they say, you know, most people say, oh, I want touch. And they go in and they say, I demand to have touch on my computer. Everybody tells me touch is the new thing. I demand to have it. And then they get it and they're like, oh, this damn thing, like, it keeps flopping all over the place right. Anytime I accidentally touch a screen. They don't like it.
In defense of touch, I have a Lenovo Yoga Pro 2 in front of me, which has a touch screen. And although I don't really use it in, like, tablet mode, I do occasionally just kind of swipe up and down on the page, which might not be worth the extra, you know, $500
or whatever. Right, the battery costs, too, because it actually, I can't remember who, found out last year that a lot of these devices had 2 to 3 hours less battery life when they, just having touch enabled, not even using it, just having it enabled was killing battery life.
But I do agree with you, Andy. Like, if you get used to scrolling, it's nice. And what I will say about, and I don't know if you find this, Alex, with the MacBook Pro with Touch Bar, but just having that Touch Bar there makes me more likely to touch the screen.
Yes. If I'm reviewing a computer at work that has a touch screen and I'm using it constantly, and then I go home and I use my regular computer, I get fingerprints everywhere. It's really, really – I can't eat Cheetos anymore. It's ruined it.
Apple had briefly kind of flirted with the idea of merging iOS and macOS. Do you think that'll ever happen, or will those remain separate ecosystems?
I think about this a lot. And
she does.
I do, actually. I think about this a lot, especially, you know, when we get closer to the developer conference and we see what's happening. You know, macOS, as it's now called, is basically, I guess, 17 years old. And technically, it's older than that if you want to go back to its next step roots. It's basically 20-plus years old. And they've done a lot with it. And I think they've kind of reached, other than adding some kind of maybe user-facing features. Obviously, the fingerprint sensor is a huge part of the new Touch Bar. That's actually my favorite part of the Touch Bar is the fingerprint sensor.
Mine too.
I love that. You know, the adding Siri integration, better iCloud integration. But they've, I think, kind of reached the point where it feels finished. Whereas iOS is similarly very mature at this point, but they could do a lot more. I don't know.
Where do you see them doing more with it?
Well, I could see them maybe opening, for instance, if you look at the iPad Pro and you look at iOS on the iPad Pro and the way multitasking works, it works very well for two apps. I would love to see more than two apps supported.
Yeah.
I would love to see it easy to access iCloud or a file picker from within other applications. Apple has been very hesitant to ever give, you know, a true file manager in iOS, but I would like to see it. You know, I'm not saying I want to see Finder, but it would be nice to more easily access files that are stored other places on your iPad rather than everything being in little silos. If you'd asked me a couple of years ago, I would have said, well, obviously, there's not going to be an OS 11. They're just going to fuse the two together. And then last year, you know, they announced a new name in macOS. And when they did that, I kind of thought, you know, maybe they are going to keep them separate. And what will happen is that over time, they will just start to resemble each other more. And maybe in 10 years from now, it will be one operating system.
I think any shift we see is going to be like that shift from 9 to 10 back in, what was it, 2000?
Yeah.
And that was one of those things where they're like, okay, we're going to do this. And then all of your apps are going to stop working. Please stop complaining. That's just how it works. And I think that's one of the reasons we haven't seen it yet.
Yeah.
Because when they do it, it's going to be catastrophic as far as, like, press goes. People are going to be very upset, a lot of crying.
Counter thought to that, though, when they moved from the PowerPC to the Intel chips within
– Well, people were stoked about that because Hackintosh.
Well,
I mean,
yes.
I don't know about you guys.
I was, too. So a Hackintosh, which is a regular Windows computer but running an augmented version of Apple software. But the big thing there was that how is the software going to work? Because all the software had been compiled – for PowerPC processors.
Right.
And they created a tool called Rosetta, which worked very well. And they were able to do that transition and get it so that 90% of the most used Mac apps on, you know, OS X worked on Intel machines. So I think
– I mean, we'll see something like that again. But there was still a lot – like, I remember at the time, there was a lot of people who were very upset. They didn't know how things were going to work.
People will
things are on fire.
People will always be mad. But I do think that right there shows that if you did want to shift platforms, and that would be interesting if you had an ARM-based MacBook, for instance.
Yeah.
I think they could. They'd have to, again, build a software abstraction layer to convert, you know, the x86 code to ARM. But I think they could do that. And if you opened up ARM for a MacBook, then that would make it very easy to say, well, you know, all these 2 million iOS apps – well, now they run on a Mac.
The funny thing about Hackintoshes to me has been that it's so much work to get it like just running. But Windows,
but it's so satisfying.
It is satisfying, but by comparison, Windows is literally designed to like run on any hardware that you just cobble together,
which is deeply frustrating. Every time I'm like, I'm going to build a Hackintosh, then I'm like, I just built another gaming PC. That is all I have done today.
No, and it's frustrating too because it used to be easier because Apple would update their laptops more frequently, so you would at least have drivers available for certain.
But now they're
chipsets.
On a year cycle.
Now they're on a year cycle and they're behind. So okay, you want the XPS 13, but you want it to run Mac OS, you can maybe get it to partially work, but you're not going to be able to take full advantage of a lot of the stuff. And I mean, that kind of defeats
the purpose. When they first made the Switch, I could go out and I could buy a really cheap netbook at the time.
I did
$100 netbook and go make my own Mac Hackintosh. And it was really, really cool. And when I was going to upgrade my computer recently, I was kind of hesitant to go with a Mac again, even though all my software is on it, because of these problems we've been talking about, the delays and updates and the hardware is just being behind the times. And there was no good experience. There was no computer I could go out, like, spend a day, get it installed, and then have a pretty good experience. It was always going to be, like, a struggle. And sometimes I just need to get my work done. I don't need to, like, worry about
It's like this funny question. It's like, what's harder to install? Like, get like, Linux properly working with all of your drivers or you know, Hackintosh. And at this point, Linux is usually easier, although you still run into issues with certain systems.
I will say, talking about the Apple iOS merger, the Mac iOS merger, the one thing that really terrifies me about that is you were talking about how, oh, it would be really nice if iOS came out one day with a file browser, and we just don't have that. And that kind of walled garden that they have terrifies me in a PC, like a full-on PC.
Yeah, I think that if they were to merge the two, there'd be no way they could alienate the Mac community who needs more. And in fact, that's one thing we saw when they in their software from years past. I think it was Lion, where they'd kind of made the UI change and made it look more like iOS, and it was soundly rejected. And Mountain Lion, they added more pro features. And then Mavericks, they added things back that they'd taken away.
Yeah.
So they've had a positive history, frankly, when they've tried to, I guess, dumb down Mac OS. Users have freaked, and they've said, no, okay, we're not going to do that again.
I was one of those users. I went on many Apple fan sites in the early 2000s when I couldn't, like, change the taskbar anymore up at the top. I used to have it, like, a bright neon pink.
Oh, yeah.
It was so cool, and you could do different fonts all over your computer. It was totally easy.
And then it was Leopard that killed that.
They killed it, and I was just throw my computer away. I'm going to move to Windows now.
You know what I'm wondering, as you mentioned Apple fan sites, why is it that Windows in its various forms has like 90% of the market or whatever, and yet we're here like so preoccupied with Apple and Mac OS. Why is it like people like us are so interested in the
design,
of Apple?
Right? I think it's the design, and I think that it starts going back to the 90s when they were kind of the underdogs.
Yeah.
And you had a very vocal group of people on the internet who started building cool things for the Mac, and it made you feel special. And I think that because it was so much smaller,
Apple makes me feel special.
Well, but I think having a Mac made you different. I mean, you know, not to quote one of their PR things.
Here's to the crazy ones, the misfits, the rebels, the troublemakers, the round pegs in the square holes, the ones who see things differently.
But it was different to have a Mac even in the early 2000s, and I think that a lot of people, especially who might have been in like in high school or college or kind of learning computers, kind of said, "Oh, well, this is different, and I can do things with this."
Well, especially when they moved out when they brought in OS X, and suddenly you had access to a lot of these tools and stuff that were previously only available to Linux users.
Yes,
it was a really cool kind of hacky computer.
It was you the could best do of some, both worlds.
Yeah, you could do some really fun stuff with it, and that's why people really liked it. It was like, okay, Steve Jobs is this really cool guy who came in and like resurrected this company after they tried to like kill him and get him out of the company. So he's awesome, and this is awesome. And there's like this fun, not grunge, but like a little bit of a punk aesthetic to it all. And you're like, yeah, I'm a badass because I have a Mac.
And I have a command line.
I never actually said that out loud. That's very upsetting to say. But there was definitely that thought to it. And then now it's super popular. The iPhone came along. Stupid iPhone ruined it.
Let's see if we can get some specific recommendations in here. Because an average person is going to walk into Best Buy or someplace like that.
Right.
Maybe spend $1,000 on a laptop. What would be a good Windows machine? Do you have any suggestions?
Ooh, that depends on the size.
Yeah, it does.
If you're going with it, I think Samsung is making some really, really good devices right now. I think they're making really smartly designed devices. And their 15-inch Notebook 7 Flip, I think that's the name of it, is absolutely fantastic. 15-inch, that's under $1,000. You can upgrade it a lot. Last year I said this is kind of what I want everybody to be making, at least one of these machines, because it's for kids going to college. It's for people who just need one computer and they're not necessarily going to be sitting on the couch using it all the time.
And I would say for a 13-inch, I think the Dell XPS 13 is – you can get that configured well under $1,000. It's a great machine. I don't like where the webcam is located, but that complaint aside, it's a really good machine, especially – you don't even have to get it with the 4K screen, but if you do get it with the 4K screen,
you get that over
the
HP?
I would. I think the HP, the X360 is a good laptop, mm-hmm. and that is, if you did want that kind of convertible experience, would be what I would recommend. But I think that overall, just because of the design and how lightweight it is, I think that I would probably recommend the XPS 13. But the new HP Spectre X360 is very good. And I'm saying that about an HP computer, so that's...
It's a nice computer.
Yeah, HP has done some nice stuff recently. If someone is opting into the Apple ecosystem, and let's just talk in terms of laptops, which MacBook do you think they should get?
I would still say send them to the Touch Bar because it's a little more juiced up.
I would agree.
I think you get the gimmicky Touch Bar, but also you get the gimmicky Touch Bar. But you get much better processor, and it's just – right?
Then the processor performance is very similar between the non-touch bar and touch bar, but the big difference is you're going to have 4 USB-C ports.
That was it. That was the other thing.
And I think that for a long-term commitment is more important than the touch bar stuff. I think it's worth the extra couple $100 if you're making kind of a long-term purchase.
Yeah.
Because everything now runs off of those ports. And we haven't even touched on the dongle hell stuff. Again, I think that will work itself out. But if I were buying a computer that only had 2 ports, even though you can daisy chain things, you're still limited by certain...
For the price of that computer, because you're spending at least, what, $1,500 on it.
Right.
So for a $1,600 computer to only have 2 ports, that's...
Exactly.
That's a commitment. Unless you're one of those people who can blow that every couple of years, just go ahead, save up a few more dollars, and get the Touch Bar.
Okay, with that, I think we can leave our Mac versus Windows discussion there. Christina, where can people find you on the internet?
Well, you can find my writing at gizmodo.com, and you can find me on Twitter at film_girl.
And Alex?
You can also find my writing at gizmodo.com, and you can also find me on Twitter, but not at whatever she said, Alex H. Kranz. Alex Kranz is apparently some sort of Russian DJ. So
oh, really?
He has my Twitter handle. We've been fighting over it for years.
For some mad beats, check out Alex Kranz on Twitter. Thank you both very much for joining me in the studio today.
Thank you. It was a
pleasure.
Thanks
for having us.
As usual, we like to round out the show with our own personal upgrades that we've made in our life. I'll go ahead and start. My upgrade this week is large ice cubes, giant ice cubes. I have a very contentious relationship with ice. Because supposedly these larger ice cubes melt less in your drink, which is why they're supposed to be better. And I always pushed against that because I don't know if the physics actually line up there. But I recently got some large ice cube trays. They're like, I don't know, maybe 2-inch large cubes that you put in your drink. And I have to say, I'm very happy with my large ice cubes. They're very satisfying to clink around in a glass.
That's a cool,
Eric,
cool ice hack.
What is your upgrade this week? It is a cool ice hack.
My upgrade is I wrote about an extension called Data Selfie, which sounds very boring, but what it does is it tracks your Facebook usage just locally on your own machine and performs similar kind of analytics to what Facebook might do. But it shows it to you instead of hiding it and using it to sell you ads. I've been playing around with it for several days now, and I think it's fun and scary to see what they can figure out about your personality based on just the things you like or the things you comment on. I think a lot of us don't really realize how much of a personality profile companies can put together for with just your social media information. So I think everyone should try it out once and then probably stop using Facebook. But if you've ever been curious about how paranoid you actually need to be, this is depressing.
That's a good upgrade, though. Just delete Facebook.
Yeah.
Thorin, what are you up to? What's your upgrade this week?
My upgrade this week is that grocery stores or a bunch of food manufacturers have kind of agreed on a new expiration date labeling system that kind of simplifies everything and kind of makes it just standardized, which is good. So hopefully in the grocery store, we'll start seeing expiration dates that say best if used by or use by instead of the like dozen other terms that they randomly choose to use that make no sense and cause us all to throw out food at weird, awkward times because we're not sure if it's okay to eat or not.
That would be very helpful.
Yeah, I'm always sniffing the milk. You got to sniff the milk. Thank you for listening to our podcast here at Lifehacker. If you'd like to ask us a question, email us at upgrade@lifehacker.com or leave us a message at 347-687-8109 and we'll try to answer them on the air. Eric and Thorin, where can people find you on the web? Eric, where are you at?
You can follow me on Twitter at Lord Ravenscraft and pretty much nowhere else. Oh, I'm also on Instagram. You can find me Lord Instagram on there too. I don't post there much, but right. I'd like to see it.
Lord Instagram?
Did I say Lord Instagram?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's go with that. Actually, I'm going to go grab that one right now. Lord Ravenscraft on Instagram, and soon I will take over Instagram.
We'll follow Lord Instagram. Thorin, where are you on the web?
You can find me on Twitter at King Thor, or I guess on Instagram at Thorin Klosowski, if you can spell that out.
And also on lifehacker.com, I think.
Oh, yeah, you can find me on lifehacker.com.
Oh.
Yes. We can mention, Eric, you're going to be joining a different side, aren't you?
I'm leaving Lifehacker probably before this episode airs, and I'll be moving over to How To Geek. But I will miss you guys so much.
We'll miss you, and I'm sure you'll go on to write some cool stuff.
Probably.
The Upgrade is produced by Levi Sharp. Our executive director of audio is Mandana Mofidi. Brad Fisher mixed this episode. Follow Lifehacker at Lifehacker on Twitter and on Facebook at facebook.com/lifehacker. You can also find the show notes at lifehacker.com/the show. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.